Welcome to More Like TV's Fargo Season 2 review. This week, since we're a little behind because of the holidays and stuff and all around laziness, we are going to be doing the last three episodes. First time we've ever done a three episode thing on More Like TV. Three episode of Fargo. Joined by Marie Lopez.
Hello.
John Sanzari.
Yes, Muslik.
Mitch Heil.
Oh, yeah. Hello there.
Sherry Dahl.
Oh, hi.
They are a resident Minnesota correspondent. And a lot of this episode took place in Minnesota's, both of them.
Both Minnesota's.
What are the names of the three episodes? Do we have them?
Yes. I don't know.
I know them. Oh, pick me.
Go ahead.
I know them.
Oh, I wanted to do it.
I know them. Okay, so three episodes ago, which was episode 7, it was, did you do this? No, you didn't. Episode 8 was Lop Lop. And episode 9 was The Castle.
Okay. So, wow. A lot of stuff happened. I don't know if we're just going to go down. Let's just talk. You know, yeah. Fuck it. Let's just talk.
Let's go out of order.
It doesn't matter.
There was a lot of killings.
It's a kangaroo court.
I know.
There was a lot of travel.
All right. So.
A lot of murders.
Wow.
Let's just say, like, what was the one? Let's just open up for question and answer. What was the most surprising thing that's happened in the last three episodes? I'll start with Sherry.
Skip me.
I will start with Mitch. Mitch, okay, what surprised you the most?
The absolute most surprising thing this whole season has been Hanzi killing Dodd last week.
That was because he called him a half-breed mongrel.
Right.
Yeah.
By the way, was the last episode, this week's episode, that was Martin Freeman, right? The guy from the first season?
That's what I thought.
It had to be.
The narration, like, is that Martin Freeman or is it just some other British guy?
It had to be. It had to be.
And also what was interesting, if you're going to be talking about that episode, is the state sheriff from Dakota was Herbert Stokes from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh,
and all
yeah.
I saw him as was, you were the great grand wizard in the KKK.
Wasn't so, one of the officers also the prison ward guy in Oz, but he got fat?
Yes. And also, geez, okay, where do you want to go?
I have questions.
Sure.
I think question and answer is going to be like the best way to handle this because we're not going to go in order for the past three episodes. John, was there anything that like completely blew you out of the water, surprising wise?
I can't. Okay, well, I guess like from the episode 7, you did this, you did it. I cannot believe that Bear, I mean, even though they don't show it, I can't believe Bear killed Dodd's daughter.
I know, he took her out like a fucking dog in the middle of the woods.
It made me realize that's how this family is.
Like, for a second there, I thought like he might almost let her go, like she almost convinced him. And then it's like, nope, this is how it has to be. And then he shoots her.
Then, to me, the most shocking thing was the fucking UFO at the end of this week's episode.
Amazing.
Did not see that coming. And even though it's out there, I liked it.
I hated it.
Really?
How about
out of the moment?
Why? You really didn't like it? I thought it was good.
Two things. One, I can't.
It's just a flying saucer. And then
he's like, it's a flying saucer. Let's get the hell out of here.
I would say the most surprising thing for me outside of Mike Milligan almost getting killed and then not getting killed and then turning his luck around was that I completely 180'd on my opinion of Peggy Bloomquist. I hated Peggy up until she started becoming a bitch not to be reckoned with because she got actualized or realized
when
or whatever she called herself.
She stabbed Dodd twice with the knife when he was tied up was one of the funniest scenes in TV history. I just poked him.
That whole hideout thing, because like he was staring at him when they were sleeping and they put the sack on his head. He's like, don't do it. Don't do it. Or what about the whole peeing scene? He's like, I got to pee.
Or how about when he was staring at her while she was sleeping and she made her husband put a sleeping pillowcase over his head? I loved Dodd.
I said that.
Dodd being held captive by Peggy was the funniest thing I had seen in a long time. And he was just like, don't do it. don't do it. No, no, come on. You can tell, like, this giant mob boss is so annoyed that little Peggy Boomquist has gotten
him.
He is so out of his element.
Yes,
we
heard you.
He's usually on the other end of that.
We heard you, John. She was just stating her opinion in a similar situation.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry.
Well, sorry, Mitch, what did you say?
Oh, I was saying that, and Dodd is so out of his element because he's used to being on the other end of the hostage thing.
Right.
But now he's the hostage.
He's never been held captive before. I can't believe that Ed almost died and then didn't. I don't know. There's just been so many killings. So many people died.
Mike Milligan killing the Undertaker when he came there was great.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that whole like
hello, gentlemen.
Close quarter swing.
Yeah, who's that? Where's that eggplant that's been messing everything up?
Yeah.
And he just fucking
called him an eggplant.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, go ahead.
And also Mike Milligan saying, if I see you, sir, when I meet you, can I hug you or, you know, like, or can I kiss you? When Fat Damon. And something else I noticed was, has Fat Damon lost weight since the beginning of the show? He looks skinnier this episode. Right? Okay.
Well, that was a little bit
skinnier.
He looks like he's lost some. His face looks thinner.
So one of the other things I noticed between the last three episodes was Royce and I sitting there watching it, calling out when we saw it coming and when we didn't see something coming. So what was something that you guys actually did see coming?
After I saw what Hanzi was doing when he was lying to Mama Gerhard and saying that Dodd is alive and the Kansas City people have him, I knew that he was going to kill Mama Gerhard.
Yeah,
I knew that they were all going to die, and he was setting up for an ambush. Did not see that coming. I did not see her getting stabbed.
Yeah, I knew she was pretty much dead the moment that they decided to take her down to the motel.
I knew the mom was going to die. Like, I had it. I felt like it was coming, and it had to come soon, and she did.
Well,
I mean, by the mom, I mean the little girl's mom, Salverson's mom.
Well, we don't know.
We don't know.
She just passed out. We don't know if she's dead or if they just took her to the hospital.
Oh, this is true. I assume
that
that
scene made me bawl. I'm like, no.
I'm just going to have a prediction, and I'm going to say that she's dead because there was Lou tried to call home once. Nobody answered. This was right after she passed out. And then he almost called again when he got to the Minnesota state line, but then he turned around. So I have a feeling that she's dead and he's not going to get to talk to her again.
Shit.
Also, the scene when fucking the Indian shot the guy, the gas station. That guy's such a good shot. Shot him through the window.
Right.
Holy shit.
The one thing I was hoping for, and so I pretty much expected it, was that all of the South Dakota, or at least most of the South Dakota police officers, were going to get themselves killed.
Oh, and I really enjoyed the homage in episode 8 of the movie. You know, he's going crazy out there by the lake.
Yeah.
Yes.
Said it twice.
That was fucking perfect. And her messing with the TV like they did in the movie with the cabin.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know where it's going to, because I've read that season 3 is going to take place modern day again after season 1. So I don't, they could potentially bring some people back, like an older Mike Milligan.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I mean, they could, but
I did like how in the episode 9, the castle, that they brought a narrator, which was obviously the guy from the first season,
Martin Freeman.
Thank you, Martin Freeman. They brought in a storytelling narration theme to episode 9 that was not there in any of the other ones. Like, they opened it up like it was a book. They were telling stories about the olden days. They were, you know, telling the fable of the Sioux Falls Massacre. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was him, by the way. It was Martin Freeman. I just looked it up so you guys know.
I enjoyed how they kind of changed it up a little bit on that episode.
I enjoyed it as well.
But going back to what I was saying about how I called it, how dumb were those South Dakota cops?
I was actually glad that they were all dead.
Yeah.
Because it was like, you guys, radio silence. They weren't lit. They can give two shits.
Where's
what,
the favorite place you took a piss? I pissed in a sink.
My thing is that dumb broad, the dumb South Dakota female fat cop, thought that undercover meant they all wear the same shirt and jeans.
Right.
Yeah.
Wranglers and white shirts.
That out too.
For all of them. I was so mad. I know it was a little thing, but I was like, this is an undercover. You guys look like a you're in the fucking West Side Story.
And you know what? The fact that somebody else, I forget which person it was, yelled out as soon as they saw Larson, "These are cops," just goes to show you that they're all just that dumb that they got fooled by it because they didn't realize they were cops while they were shooting at the people in the white t-shirts and Wrangler jeans.
Right.
Yeah.
Because Ted Danson was the only one that put a uniform on because he's like, fuck this. You know, I'm not going to play this game.
That was something that Royce called out loud while we were watching it. He said, oh, he just put on his uniform. That's going to be what saves his life.
That's what I thought, too, because
I was giving you credit. You said that. I didn't say that. You said that.
He was in a. Yeah, I mean, the whole. I love when Mike Milligan showed up and he's like, okay, I guess this is taken care of. Like, it was perfect. He was like, all right, well, this is done.
Well, he had to get the hell out of there because he heard the sirens coming right behind him and he didn't want to be associated with that mess.
Right. And I believe he saw Mama Gerhard dead on the ground. So it's like, all right, then my job's done.
Yep. Mm-hmm. This is his luck completely flipped between he was almost dead because he couldn't handle it to they all killed themselves for him.
Mm-hmm.
And now he can take all the credit.
And the Indian shooting everybody, shooting the bar people, shooting the people at the bar, and then shooting the wound, shooting him in the knee because the wounded knee was hilarious.
That whole scene because he parked in like a no parking place. He saw there was a plaque that 22 Sioux Indians were killed. He goes inside. He wants to order a beer, and he knows the bar that he's going to come into. And the guy clearly spits in a glass, and he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I meant tequila." And he's like, "We don't serve." And the guy was talking about something, and he's like, "We don't serve your kind." He was like, "What about a guy who did 3 tours, got a Purple Heart and 3 Bronze Stars?" And then he walks out, and it's like, "You guys don't want to do this." And then he just shoots them. And then the cops, like how quick the cops were to fucking come to the scene, and then he just takes those two out.
Yeah, and then the South Dakota cop following Salverson to the state line. Was so stupid.
The police are just Salverson and Larson are the only two decent cops in the entire tri-state area that we've been watching.
That's what I was like. There's no good cops.
Oh, my favorite line was when Salverson said to that Fargo cop, "I was like, you're a shit cop. You know that?"
Yes.
It was fantastic, and it was completely true.
But then he killed people. That shit cop, the detective,
right.
That was surprising.
Yeah. I didn't see that coming. I thought he was going to take him out. He was going to turn around and he was going to get shot by like friendly fire through the back of the head or something. Instead, they just freaking pistol whip him.
Yeah, I did not see the detective being able to shoot anyone. I thought he was completely inept.
Yep.
Though I did assume that Peggy and Ed were going to get away because of all the shootings, that they were just going to slip out of the way.
The ice machine's busted.
But what I didn't assume was that it was going to be a UFO that got them to get out of the way in time.
I predicted that.
Right. Yay. And Bear would have killed Lou if the UFO didn't show up because he shot him in the head.
Dude.
And he just turned around and looked at him and ran right at him. And he shot him 2 more times and he tackled him. And
dude, how did that guy not die the first 2 times he got shot?
He's a bear.
Yeah,
that guy was scary. I couldn't believe that he was still choking out Salverson after getting hit with 2 bullets. That guy, dude, he's just burly and also now dead. Very dead.
Yeah.
So do you think that Larson is going to make it? Because Larson told Salverson to go after Peggy, the Bloomquists.
I don't think so.
You think he's going to die? He got shot in the stomach. It could be either way.
Yeah, I think in this next episode, he's not going to make it.
Do you think Salverson has just lost his father-in-law and his wife all while he was trying to save the day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the ineptitude of the North Dakota cops, his wife dies. I imagine Larson's going to die, and all of it's going to culminate. And he's probably not going to quit in this next episode, but probably the last episode, he's going to give it up and
do the diner thing, yep. Which is ironic considering this all started with a diner.
Right.
Yes.
Indeed it did.
Good point.
Listening to Ed and Peggy confess at the beginning of episode 9 again was fantastic.
Yeah, man, I turned around on Peggy and I really hated her, But when she was stabbing him, and I was like, this is hilarious.
She asked him if he wanted beans, and he said no, and then she started feeding it to him anyways.
When fucking Fat Damon had to take his dick out.
Oh, you said you don't like beans. Oh.
When Fat Damon had to take his dick out so he could pee.
Yeah.
So the dog could pee.
Oh, God. Or what about the crap, the freak, Hanzi didn't even, like, shoot the Blomquist, he just wanted a haircut.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he wanted to turn his life around. Like, he was done. After he killed Dodd, he's like, I'm done with this family. I'm done with the mob thing. I just want to, you know, turn my life around. And then.
Well, that was the narration actually asked a question, which I'd like to ask all of you, which is, when did Hanzi turn?
I'm going to have to say it was a slow buildup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he's just been, you know, their pawn, and they saw him as a lesser human being, and as Dodd put it, a mongrel. And
what a dumb thing to say, by the way, when the guy's about to save you.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he would have killed him if he wouldn't said that.
I bet it was the bar. That's where he turned around. Like, he was pissed off. He was, you know, mad at Dodd, but when he went to the bar, and then there was just the blatant racism against him.
Did you spit in this?
He was pissed off, and then he gets to Dodd, who is supposed to be his friend or handler or whatever, and then he does the same shit as those other people did. I think that's when it happened.
The whole Gerhardt family is dead now, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Is there anybody left? Like,
Grandma and Grandpa are dead. The two brothers are dead. The daughter is dead. Oh no, the retard or the disabled son is still in jail.
He's in jail. Isn't the father? Isn't he still in a wheelchair from the stroke?
No,
they killed him when they shot up the house.
They killed him and buried him.
Right. Okay. Fuck.
Remember the scene where they were showing the burial outside the front of the Gerhardt's house, and they were burying the grandfather.
There might be some low-level people around still, but nobody of power.
No, I meant like the family.
Yeah, they're all gone.
The only one is Bear's son. He's still alive.
Well, and Dodd has like four daughters or something, but we've never really been introduced to them except the one.
Yeah, that's
true. She's clearly dead.
Well, yeah, she's definitely dead.
So dead. Can anyone explain to me how Floyd and the daughter survived Mike Milligan shooting up their household? Because I don't know how that could have happened. I mean, I assume that they were alive, but theoretically, why would Milligan have left knowing that they were alive?
Maybe just wanted to send a message.
That's could have been that. Okay, right. So I have another question then. So when Dodd goes to Peggy's house and he, you know, Hanzi goes through the back of the house and he hits Larson on the back of the head, knocks him out. So at that point, Bear and the Indian and a bunch, and basically everyone else except for Dodd and one other guy, go to the police station where Dodd is still in the basement of the other guy. Mm-hmm. So at what point does Larson gets up after Peggy had already taken Dodd? They leave. Larson gets up and drives back to the police station only to drive back to the house.
Yeah, because he said we know where they're going. I mean, that's what I thought, too. I didn't make any sense. Also, the newspaper so quickly putting up a manhunt for somebody was kind of weird, too, for the Indian.
Right.
Like, it was odd. It was like that quick. There's a manhunt in the newspaper.
Right. I didn't know they had pictures of him.
Yeah.
Because they did.
It could have been a police sketch art.
No, it was clearly a picture.
Yeah. Oh, it was.
Did you notice the foreshadowing in the phone booth for the Sioux Falls Massacre?
Yes, with the hangman.
The hangman. Yep. It spelled out Sioux Falls, and it didn't have all the letters.
Yes, and
I saw that there was hangman, but I couldn't make out what it was saying, so I did not put two and two together that they were foreshadowing the Sioux Falls Massacre.
And then Dodd tried to hang Fat Damon.
Yup.
Well, he did for a while.
Yeah, it's true.
He's
got his Fat Damon neck.
He tried to hang and kill Fat Damon. He was successful in the hanging.
Wow, Dodd was really just not a very good criminal.
No.
Like, no one's really good at their job except for maybe Salverson.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not good at their job.
Actually, his wife was better at his job than
he was. Yeah, that's true.
That is true.
Yeah, then there was the scene where the lawyer, what's his name, Nick Offerman, stays with her. He's a breakfast king of whatever. Then he hugs her and she's all freaked out that he hugged her. That was great. That was a great scene.
That is good. She was a very tragic character in that she was brave and stoic and did not want help knowing that she was going to die.
Yeah.
And it was just weird to me that she was so helpful to her husband and she was so smart and I don't know what he's going to do now. Like I admittedly have not seen season one, so I'll have to go back and watch season one. So I don't know, you know, what you guys are saying about Salverson.
The only person
diner
that we know is alive is Salverson. Because in the first season, Salverson owns a diner and Molly, his daughter, is a cop. So we know they live.
I see. But yeah, it's a shame about his wife. He never remarries, or as much as you know, he doesn't remarry.
I don't think so. They never mention it.
Even though I believe she the wife told Offerman that if he wants to marry, he can, as long as it wasn't so and so.
Yeah.
Her eyes are too close together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the whole story that he was supposed to marry her sister, but then she didn't wait for him when he went to war. So she ended up marrying him instead.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Again, aww, just very sad. Yeah. I think her whole purpose in the storyline was just to make you feel bad.
Yeah, you really do feel bad for her, too.
Totes.
Now, again, going to something different. Man, some of the shots in this are beautiful.
Like, they did a really good job.
You know what I mean? Like, they set up these angles. I am digging the split screen in this season. The way they did it looks really good.
It's a great way of showing two things happening at the same time.
But then they'll also show like the same guy.
Yeah.
Both screens, but at different times. Like Milligan was in the phone booth.
Yes.
In one screen, he's still on the phone booth contemplating what he's about to do and straightening his tie. The other one, he's walking out of the phone booth to his car, but it's clearly the same time.
I thought it was really cool.
It was really good. I liked it.
It makes me appreciate watching TV because you get the same quality that you would watching a movie, but it's in TV. You realize that you can still get the same type of respect and an actual film quality in a
television. But it's spread out over, you know, a longer period of time. So you can really develop characters. Whereas in movies, you get an hour and a half, 2 hours to introduce story and characters, introduce the bad guy, and solve the story.
But it's consistent too, which is also really fascinating.
I thought a great choice in storytelling was how in the last three episodes, they would jump forward in time to show somebody's storyline, then go backwards, show how they got to it, and then repeat. And you watched a little bit of where you left off before continuing forward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it happened in this past episode, Castle, where we're like, wait, didn't we see this? Oh, they're just showing a second of it. Okay, they're just taking us back to where we were. Which I don't think I've seen that anywhere else.
We saw Dodd's perspective being in the care of Peggy and Fat Damon. Mm-hmm. And then we saw Hansi's perspective of it. And then we got to Mom's perspective.
How many shots do you think that they needed to take? Or do you think that they shot it over the course of different days and they just had to take really good notes about where they were all standing and what they were wearing?
No, I mean, they shot it all at the same time. Yeah. They just cut it together. You know,
right?
But they did really good with the continuity.
Yeah, they don't really change clothes that much. Like the kitchen is always wearing white pants and the red jacket. Milligan's always wearing basically the same thing.
A really awful '70s blazer.
Yeah,
with the bolo tie.
With the bolo tie.
Yeah, it was funny to see that in the '70s there were still some people alive that witnessed the Sioux Falls thing, which is ridiculous when you think about it. You know. Like that massacre, I looked up the Sioux Falls massacre. It's pretty fucking bad. They killed a lot of fucking Indians.
What or do you remember anything about it? Because I don't know too much about the history of the Sioux Falls massacre.
Well, the quality is like bogging out.
What do you mean?
Like when you were talking about the Sioux Falls massacre, at like. Trickled a little bit, and then when Marie just talked, it almost sounded like the feed was going
to
get cut.
Mitch, do you hear me okay?
It was good to me. No, it was good to me.
It might be your end, John.
So the Sioux Falls Massacre was something that happened at what point in time? Was it in the
1800s?
Late 1800s?
Yeah. Here, I'll pull it up.
And it was lazy. What? Just awful Americans being awful and killing Native American Indians? As we do sometimes?
You know, that's why they have
casinos. So it was like a lynch mob or something?
That's why they have casinos. I wonder if there's a video so we don't even have to read. That would be awesome.
Because reading is hard.
Ah, fuck it. I'll read it. Sioux Falls Massacre. Oh, come on.
Where's Wikipedia when you need it?
I'm sorry. Not Sioux Falls. Wounded Knee. I'm sorry. I meant to say Wounded Knee. Wounded Knee.
Oh.
God, I'm such an idiot. Wounded Knee, which
oh,
is the
wait, why is it not called? Is
Sioux Falls Massacre is from the show. Wounded Knee is when they killed all the Indians. Yeah.
I see. That's why I'm confused. Did they explain Sioux Falls Massacre in season one?
They only briefly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, hold on. Let's learn. Let's all learn together.
All right. Are we pulling up the History Channel?
Apparently, there's a video from the History Channel, yes, about the Wounded Knee.
And Sitting Bull?
Yes.
Oh, is this Pawn Stars? I love that show.
No.
Ancient Aliens?
No. It's a...
Oh, are there UFOs at Wounded Knee,
There's
too?
No proof that there wasn't.
Is this an ad?
No, this is it.
In the area we now call North Dakota, among a vast nation of people called the Sioux.
This is great. I love this story.
In 1831, the man called Sitting Bull was born, and in the Hunkpapa Lakota tribe he grew.
I don't like Beck's new song, guys.
They called him Sitting Bull because his courage was like a bison who would fight instead of run.
Then why did they call him Sitting Bison?
He had a wife and child and became the tribe's medicine man. But for his nation, there were troubled times to come.
He's shoehorning some of these words.
1840, 1850, 1860. More and more white people moved west every year. The whites had guns and strange demands that the Sioux be moved off of these lands. But like his namesake, Sitting Bull would show no fear. Sitting Bull and other brave Lakota tribesmen fought off the settlers everywhere they could. Then the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1868 conceded that settlers would stay off certain areas for good. But then whites made the Great Sioux Reservation and said all Sioux who would not live there were illegal. And because whites killed the buffalo, old Sioux ways became impossible. Many chose the reservation for their people. But Sitting Bull refused to give up independence, even if it meant hard, lonely, hungry days. And as his legend spread around, other tribes knew where he could be found, and thousands joined him, taking courage from his ways.
Is this guy one
for Chippewa? In 1874, a colonel named George Custer declared that gold was found in South Dakota's hills. So the whites came pouring back in, with the Fort Laramie Treaty broken. All natives standing in the way could now be killed. One summer day, near a river called Little Bighorn, Custer brought troops to smash a small Indian town. But the army hadn't known how big Sitting Bull's following had grown. Instead of running, they beat Custer's army down. Sitting Bull knew there was no way in the long run they'd survive against the force they'd soon be facing. So he crossed Canada's border. He gave a choice and not an order. Some stuck with him and others moved to reservations. In later years, he came back peacefully and traveled in Buffalo Bill's Western Reenactment Fair. He saw a world he barely recognized. The whites called it civilized. He said they'd learned how to make things, but not how to share. He was killed by police on a reservation. They said he was inspiring unrest. And the memory of Sitting Bull is inspiring people still, wherever the small guys stand and fight for the oppressed.
It's nice to know people with Asperger's can make songs.
That's like what if Bob Dylan had YouTube when he was young.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I kind of want all my...
It was 1890, the massacre at Wounded Knee.
I want all my history to be drawn like that and sung through song.
Say what you want, but you know that's going to be in your head, right?
Ugh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
Nothing Jameson can't fix.
Let's do the rest of the show like it's a song.
So that's why Hansi was so angry he got that song stuck in his head?
You know what I noticed something, too, while that song was going with Hansi? Hansi gave Mama Gerhardt a chance to live. When they were, because he called the report,
told her to stay.
Yeah, and she said, "Don't are you telling me how to do it?" What, and he's like, "No."
Yeah, at that point, he had to kill her.
The damn Gerhardts are too proud and too stubborn.
Yep.
Dude, well, I've sent men to go out three times and they've come back failed each time. So it's time to go.
Come back unfinished, I'll finish it myself.
Well, just think about it.
You lay waste to him in the devil's hours.
How many times did Ed Blomquist call the Gerhardt family trying to tell them that they had Dodd?
Yeah, he finally, because they ignored him, then he finally went to Milligan.
Yeah. Yep. He's like, if the Gerhardts don't want their son back, I guess I'll give it to the enemy.
Yep.
And then the stupid South Dakota police thought that they could use him to stop a mob war, and that didn't work out well, did it?
And nobody wanted to listen to Lou, even though him and Larson were the only ones that were telling the truth because they've been dealing with these people this long.
I'm not here to argue the merits of a command structure when he was telling them, you're in the army.
Yeah, they were the only ones that weren't. Well, even South Dakota was alluding to the fact that they were getting paid out to be on a side.
Yeah.
And that there was corruption that they had to deal with. So it was just a matter of Selverson and Larson weren't corrupted. The detective was corrupted. South Dakota police were corrupted. Everyone was corrupted. There was only two cops that were good.
Yeah, like the nonsense when Lou found they went back to the payphone. He was going to call his wife, and he sees the bullet hole from across the parking lot. Goes, he sees the blood splatter and everything, and then the cop goes, "Hey, I got to take you back to the state line." He's like, "You're looking for a red car. The guy just drove away. He just killed the clerk." He's like, "There's like double-digit homicides." He's like, "Yeah, but my boss is a real pain in the ass. So you got to." He could give two shits.
Exactly. Selverson knows he's getting run out of the state, and he's still trying to give the other cops information to help bring these guys down. And no one's listening to the poor man. He's the only one. He's the only one that gives a shit about actually making some good in the world, and all the other people are just treating their badge as a job.
And nobody was listening to Selverson, so they drove him out of the town back to Minnesota.
But as soon as he got back, he turned around and headed right back and found his father-in-law shot in the stomach.
You say it right.
But as Bear was on the ground strangling Selverson, a spaceship came out of the sky and shined its lights. He looked up in the sky and said, "Don't anal me, probe me." And he took the gun and shot him in the neck. And then Fat Damon and his wife ran out the door. And Fat Damon looked up in the sky and said, "What is that?"
She said it was a flying saucer. But everyone knows Kristen Dunst will soon be fat.
Then Hansi turned around to the mama, and mama looked around with gaping eyes, and then he hugged her on the shoulder and reached in and grabbed a knife and then stabbed it in her chest.
Hansi also killed that lesbian hairdresser by choking her pretty neck to death.
It's okay. It's a shoehorn, just like the guy.
Yeah, it's fine. Did you notice that when she was being all romantic before Hansi showed up? When fucking she had like flowers out and candles lit.
She was just waiting for Dumps to show up so that they could fuck.
Yeah, that's
dude,
all
she
it was.
Wanted to eat that fucking cooch so bad, dude.
Unrequited love. It's a regular Romeo and Juliet story.
Actually, Juliet and Juliet.
Precisely. does anyone have any favorite moments from the last three episodes?
I got to say the shootout was very satisfying.
Yeah.
The full thing threw me off a little bit, but in like the build up to it and then how it ended was very satisfying to me.
It was really I was so anxious because I was waiting for them just to shoot because if you're looking in the background, you see like shadows of people walking. It's like, don't you see him when you're talking about your stupid story?
Right.
Oh, my God. And then they're flying over the place everywhere. Boom, boom, boom.
And it was like a 3-episode lead up to that moment. Mm-hmm. So it was a big one.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is that it would have been nice if Selverson in season one said, also I saw a flying saucer once and it saved my life. Like, it seems like that's
like, why didn't he continue to bring up
that
he saw?
I like, if I saw flying, that's all I would ever talk about.
From this day forth, every day,
and
every
it wasn't
person.
Just like one. A lot of people saw this flying saucer, right?
Yeah, and a lot of them died.
Mark dead, though.
Male died.
Ha- how about this? I predict that they're going to still see flying saucers till the end of the season. I don't think that the lead
up.
There's
only one episode left.
Palindrome. I think they're going to show. I'm still sticking with it. I am pressing my luck. I'm going. No, you know, like, no whammies, no whammies. I'm going for it. I can walk home, but I want to get that jet ski.
And then the aliens went to South Dakota. No one knows why we're there because the place sucks.
Okay, so here's a question. So Larson is big into aliens because he has his one study or whatever that's just full of
books
and writing.
Oh, yeah.
Shit like that. Did he actually see the UFO, though? Or was he just bleeding out like a baby in the hotel room?
Like a baby.
Even if he couldn't see what was illuminating the courtyard at the motel, he probably at least saw the lights.
But like, he's been waiting for this moment forever, and he didn't even get to see it because some asshole shot him.
Yeah.
Do you think he not dies and he gets abducted?
Ooh, does anyone get abducted?
I actually thought Bear was going to get fire in the sky. In that moment, I thought he was actually going to like get like teleported off of Lou. But instead he got shot.
What was dripping off, or what was that water coming down from the UFO?
Yeah, I don't know. It was weird.
Probably condensation?
I don't know.
Because at first it looked like it was like just like a loogie strand, and I thought it was like it was going to like hook somebody and bring it back up, but it turned out it was just moisture.
It did look like a loogie strand. It looked like a gross booger.
Yeah.
Questions on if Peggy and Ed survive it through the rest of the season.
I think they're going to survive.
I don't want them to.
But they will.
I think that they'll survive too, and I do want them to.
Are they going to get caught though, or are they going to stay on the run?
They'll have to stay on the run, I would guess.
I feel, from what I've seen so far, I feel that this has helped their marriage, and I think they're going to stick with it. I think they're going to be more honest with each other now. Jesus.
Yeah, I think Peggy is no longer... Peggy, I don't think, gave a shit about who she was married to. I think she was just unhappy with herself, and now she's happy with herself. And Ed, I think, is probably just happy that Peggy's happy.
But that's beautiful.
Is it, though?
I mean, for them.
Yeah, I guess so.
So I imagine at this point, though, Peggy's been off of her birth control for a while because it wasn't at the house. They've been on the run.
Oh, shit.
So maybe they're going to make a baby.
Hey.
And that baby is going to be William H.
Steve
Macy.
From Buscemi.
William H. Macy from the first movie.
Holy shit. What if that's what it is?
Boom. Perfect.
Boom. Nailed it.
Then they have to change her last name because they're on the run. So they change it to that. That makes perfect sense.
What about the whole non-vocal narration scene with Milligan in the back of the car practicing ejecting his clip and reloading?
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
He was ready for a fight.
I don't think anybody could take out...
pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, what was that, Royce?
I don't think anybody can take out the Indian, though. He's so good.
Well, I mean, he's been talking about 3 tours in Vietnam, and he's got all he's highly decorated, but the guy doesn't have a freaking social security. Like he's a ghost.
That's true.
Oh, shit. What if he works for the government? No, that's
no,
too far-fetched.
No, I don't think so. No one works for the government. Everyone's too stupid.
I'm pulling a Jar Jar Binks. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, my God.
Anything else, guys?
Last episode predictions?
I think Mike Milligan's going to live. I think his Jewish compadre is going to live. I think Peggy and Fat Damon are going to live. I think Salverson's wife's going to die.
If not already dead,
like Sherry said.
What do you think's going to happen to the Gearhart kid?
Probably stay in jail.
So they're just going to leave it at that? Like, yeah, then he went to jail. He's not going to be
Yeah, I think his storyline is done.
Honestly, for his own protection, he should stay in jail.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what else is he going to do? If he gets out, he'll get, he's the last one. I don't think they would kill him.
Oh, do you think we're going to get introduced to the big Kansas City boss?
Oh, shit. That's right.
Yeah, that shit. Fuck.
Didn't we already, though? Wasn't he the guy that was on the phone that called
You heard it.
Oh, with like the window washers and they fucking laid waste to everybody or the people that cleaned it up?
Yeah, they showed him. He was the one with the glasses, the bald guy.
Was that really the boss?
Yeah, I think so.
I think Milligan's going to become a made man. He's going to be like one of like the higher ups.
He'll probably get promoted for all this.
Just out of pure luck.
Yeah.
Because wasn't he on the payphone with his boss and he was vaguely mentioning that like the Grim Reaper never showed up?
Right.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know what happened. He just didn't show up. It's weird, right?
Totally weird.
It's so weird. That guy didn't follow up.
I would like to say that I think that the Bloomquists are going to make it out to California or wherever Peggy wants to go.
I'd like to say the Bloomquists made it out of California.
I'd like to. But, however, Hansi is still in pursuit of them.
Yeah.
Oh, so maybe they kill Hansi.
Or Hansi kills them.
Or maybe the aliens come and they take Salverson's wife and save her, but she has to live in space.
Space life.
I still think we're going to see aliens in the last episode, but that's a good thing. Like what's Hansi's game now? Because if all the Gerhardts really are done, he's got no leash now. He's free. He can just, do whatever.
True. Right. But the Bloomquists are the only ones who know who he is and the things he's done. And they know his softer side where he wants to get out of it. And like the narration said, like he's just kind of in it to basically save his own character.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Something like that.
What if he moves to Canada? Like,
oh yeah,
he'd blend in.
What if Sydney?
Yeah, he would.
Yeah, like Sitting Bull did that we just learned in our song.
That would be nice.
It wasn't Sitting Bison.
No. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Anything else?
Well, you just said
still
thanks
can't
for listening.
Get that song out of my head.
Perfect. I did find the full version of this, which we were trying to find.
Nice.
I'm playing the whole thing out. All right, guys.
Ooh, I love this.
Thanks for listening. Next week, last one. And then what show are we doing after Fargo? Do we have one lined up?
How about in February we do the People versus O.J. Simpson?
Maybe, but when's Better Call Saul come back?
Okay, yeah, we can. Yeah, you can do that leading into it.
I don't know when that comes back. There's a bunch of shows starting up in January, so.
Yeah.
What about doing Jessica Jones?
Jessica Jones is really good. The problem with that is all the episodes are out, so it's not like you could wait.
Yeah.
So what? Does it matter?
I guess not. We'll figure it out. We'll know by next week. We're going to talk about it off air. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Now we're going to rock out some 70s rock. This is Blitzen Trapper, Man of Constant Sorrow, here on More Like TV. So it's 50-